You're listening to Succeed, Just Let Go, the podcast that'll change how you think and change your life. I'm Willie Horton and I'm a psychologist, been helping people change their lives since 1996, broadcasting from the French Alps, and delighted to have you along. Let's take this week's step in the right direction.
Just as I sit down to record this podcast episode, I am reminded of sitting in a nice restaurant in Paris. Nothing special, but a nice restaurant while we were up in Paris visiting our three children who all now live in that beautiful city, the City of Light. And there we were sitting there out on a terrace amongst, probably another 100 people. And there was this waiter walking around the place, scurrying around the place, almost running around the place, cleaning tables, fixing chairs, straightening menus, ignoring people as they cried out to him for attention, ignoring people who were waving their hands, doing all manner of things, being so busy and achieving absolutely none of the things for which he was paid. It's a classic example of people being busy stupid. We talked a few weeks ago about working smarter, not harder. We've talked about stress, pressure, and struggle, and effort over the last couple of podcast episodes as well. We've talked about how there is real pressure in life. Of course there is. If you have 50 tables to serve, that's real pressure. It's much more pressured if you're not serving them. Just thinking about serving them, as we said a couple of weeks ago, what's easier to do? Just do what you have to do, or think about doing what you have to do and then try to do it through the fog of thought. The answer is blindingly obvious, but not to 96% of people. Because we know from decades of research that that is roughly the proportion of people in this world who do not know what they are doing as a result of they're not turning up to their own lives in the here and now. They are not even aware that they're not doing what they're supposed to be doing. They're not even aware that most of the pressure from which they think they are suffering is just that, pressure from which they think they are suffering. But life is full of pressures. Life is full of challenges. Of course it is. I've been working for myself for over 28 years at this stage. And I was talking to a client a couple of months ago who asked me, did I sleep well? I said, of course I sleep well. I mean, this is what I do. I help people clear their minds, live their lives properly, get a good 7 or 8 hours sleep a night to look after the long-term mental health, never mind the fact that they'll be fresh the following day. Of course I get a good night's sleep. And they said, but you work for yourself. You don't know where next month's money is coming from. I said, I know that. I said, but I know also that if I don't turn up to the here and now, next month's money will never materialize. I have to do what I need to do now to get to where I want to go. So regardless of the pressures, the stresses, and the challenges of everyday life, there is really only one thing we need to do, and that is turn up to our lives in the here and now, free of the thoughts that hold us back. I asked you a question a minute ago. I asked it last week as well, if I recollect correctly. Which is easier, to do what you have to do or to think about it and then try to do it through that fog of thought? And the answer, as I said a moment ago, is obvious. And yet, one of the key things that we do as normal crazy people is create a list of things with which to beat ourselves. Towards the end of our last podcast episode, I talked about intuition. I talked about how when you're in flow, you know what the right things are to do, you know what the right things are to say, and you know what to avoid doing and saying that'll only get you into trouble or make matters worse, the way in which normal people react to what they think is going on. I also said that when you're in that state of mind, you will know what you need to do next. You'll just know because you'll feel it. Now, before we go any further, I need to deal with the phrase that I've just used, you'll feel it. Not everybody feels their gut instinct, because different people use what psychology calls their representational systems in different ways. There are five representational systems. They are, in effect, the way in which one or more of our five senses process information. There's obviously the visual representation system. There's the kinesthetic system, the touchy-feely one. There's the auditory system. There is the olfactory system, smelling. And then there's the gustatory system, tasting. So we see, feel, hear, smell, and taste. Different people experience the world in different ways. About half the people that you will meet today are visual people, if you see what I'm saying. Now, that's not a turn of phrase. That is actually how visual people experience the world. They experience it through their vision. In other words, if they're going to set goals for the future, they're probably going to use something like a vision board, which I'll come back to later. About nearly another half of the people that you will meet today are kinesthetic. They're touchy-feely people. These are the kind of people who will, in explaining something to you, say that they're trying to give you a feel for what they're talking about. And again, that's not a turn of phrase. That's actually how they experience the world. There's also a small percentage of people that are auditory, if you hear what I'm saying. Now, again, that isn't a turn of phrase at the risk of boring you at this stage. That is how they process information. Now, they are the three main systems, seeing, feeling, and hearing. There aren't that many people knocking around who experience the world through smell and taste. We'll leave that to the dogs, who are much happier, by the way, than the rest of us. If you ever see normal crazy people out walking their dog, you have to ask the question as to which of them is on the lead, because the dog is having fun smelling his way through his experience of the moment, whilst the guy holding the lead is probably buried in thought. There's a 96% chance that he's buried in thought. Now, we've digressed a little bit, but I want to come back to the point that I was making in relation to your intuition or gut instinct. Not everybody feels their gut instinct. Some people will hear it. They call it their inner voice. And some people will have a picture of the direction in which they need to go today. They're the visual people. So different people will express intuition according to which representational system they primarily use in the course of their everyday lives to get a feel or see or hear what's going on. Now, of course, 96% of people using the representational systems are seeing, feeling, and hearing, but they're not paying attention to what they're seeing, feeling, and hearing, because what is coming in through those three systems has to be interpreted by their thinking minds. We talked about this before. If somebody says something to you, you will interpret it on the basis of the mood you're in, what you're thinking about at that moment in time, which is directly related to the mood you're in, what you think of yourself, which is always biased towards the negative, what the person that you think you are thinks of the person that said those words to you, and only then will you begin to actually interpret the words. The fact is that, as we talked about the fog of thought a minute ago, the fact is that by the time you actually come to a conclusion as to what the other person said to you actually meant, well, first of all, the moment is lost, and secondly, so are you. You're lost in thought. And that adds to the pressure under which we put ourselves, because now, being lost in thought, I will react, and I'll react automatically in a way that is less than optimal in terms of me having a good day, the other person having a good day, and perhaps the two of us having a good day together. And this isn't just obviously from a work point of view, it's very important from a personal relationship point of view as well. Because obviously, when we talk about working smarter rather than harder, we're not talking about just what you do from 9 to 5 or 8 to 6 or 8 to 8 for some mad crazy people. We're talking about the business of living your life to the full. Indeed, when I talk to leaders in business, for example, about leadership and leadership development, only then does it begin to dawn on them that the first thing that they need to lead is their own lives. Now, you're only going to get in your own way if you are deliberately confusing what is real pressure with what is pressure constructed by the thought that is going on in your own mind. And one of the worst things that we can do is have a normal to-do list. I made the point towards the end of last week's podcast. A couple of people have come back to me and said, what did you mean that you won't even need a to-do list? Now, bear in mind, I made that comment in the context of you being in flow so that you know what to do. I made that comment in the context of asking yourself an open question before you go to bed at night. What's the next most important thing I need to do? So that as you sleep, or should I say as your thinking mind sleeps, your doing mind, your subconscious mind, the subcortical brain, will get your ducks in a row and present you with the key things that you need to do when you wake up the following day. Now, you may not be fully aware of them the minute you wake up. Some of them might occur to you when you're in the shower, or some of them will occur to you during the cut and thrust of the day. But the really important things that you have to do will never have appeared on your to-do list. Why? Because it is your thinking mind that creates your to-do list for you. It is your thinking mind that then takes your to-do list and beats you around the head with it. It is your thinking mind that will tell you that you can be sure when you go into the office tomorrow morning and look at your to-do list and then look ahead to the nonsense that is going to happen during the course of the day because you're mingling with normal crazy people, you can be sure, as somebody said to me a couple of days ago, I can be sure that by the time I leave the office this evening, my to-do list will be longer than it was this morning. How to motivate yourself, eh? How to beat yourself up. I will always, at one point or another in conversation with clients or online program owners, I will always recommend that they ask themselves the kind of open question that I mentioned to you a minute ago before they go to bed at night. They will always come back to me and say, I found myself the following morning doing something that I hadn't planned to do. I found myself doing something that my thinking mind thought was unnecessary, unreasonable, or actually nothing to do with what I was supposed to be doing today at all. And then as I did it, and I did it because it felt right, or my inner voice told me, then as I did it, I realized that I hit flow. I did it effortlessly. And whilst I was doing it, some of the rubbish on my to-do list dealt with itself. Or someone else did it for me, or it just went away. What I discovered was that the thing that my intuition told me to do was the most important thing that I needed to do at that moment in time. Let's roll this back to evolutionary times. I'm walking through the bush looking for tonight's dinner, and there is a tiger walking through the bush looking for tonight's dinner as well, and I'm on the menu. I'm confronted by this person-eating beast. I don't have time to think about what I need to do. My intuition tells me. And I do just what I need to do to get out of that situation. This is how the subcortical brain works. Now, unfortunately, evolution saw to it that it is only in life-threatening situations that the subcortical brain works that way. It works that way in modern times as well, for example, when we find ourselves in a crisis situation, in an emergency. And as a number of people will have said, perhaps even to you and me over the course of our lives, when we found ourselves in an emergency, it's like as if we took on superhuman powers and I ended up doing things that I thought I couldn't do. Now, that's simply because in an emergency, that part of the subcortical brain, the survival part, kicks in and you do what you have to do, either to save yourself or to save other people, because you haven't got the time to think about the 10 or 20 different reasons that your thinking mind will give you to not do what intuitively you know you need to do in exactly the same way. I had a conversation with a new client a couple of months ago, a businessman in the northeast of England, who was in a university talking to a group of students as part of a promotion that he was doing, and got talking to this 18-year-old girl. And in the course of the conversation, it occurred to him that what she had mentioned to him would, if it was put on a proper footing, create an amazing business. He just knew it instinctively. It hit him between the eyes, as he said to me. He had to drive an hour and a half home from the university. And on the way home, his thinking mind gave him, now he didn't count it, but he reckoned there were about 30 bad reasons as to why he should not run with that particular idea. Now, in the end, he actually did run with the idea, and it is now a thriving business. The fact of the matter is, though, that we have too much time to think, and we only convolute our own thinking by putting down on a list things that we don't actually have to do, things that our thinking mind have said that you need to do. Now, don't get me wrong. There is a place in our lives for a to-do list, but not the kind of to-do list that most people have. Or should I say, not the kind of to-do list that 96% of people have. There's that 96% again. They are the percentage of people on this planet who are missing in action. If there are tasks that you absolutely know you have to do, what is the point of carrying the reminder of having to do those things around in your own head when you could dump it out onto a sheet of paper or onto your notes on your smartphone? In other words, there is a place for a to-do list by way of clearing our minds of the stuff that we know we have to do. But the problem with the to-do list that most people have, particularly from a work point of view, is that it comes from the way in which they think about the pressure that they think they are experiencing, on the one hand. And on the other hand, there are other lunatics who will ask them to put stuff on their to-do list. So in other words, not only are you now being influenced by the madness of your own thinking mind, you're now being influenced by the madness of other people's thinking minds as well. Consider, let's take a simple practical example. You are a senior person in an organization and you're a member of a team of 10. And the team of 10 gets together in a meeting room to have, let's say, a project meeting. How many people turn up to that meeting? Now, say you're one of my clients or you're an online program owner, you will turn up. You'll be there in the room, not just physically, but you will be there mentally. So many people have said to me over the years, I sat in a room with all my colleagues and looked around at them, and there wasn't a single other person present in the room. If 96% of people are normal, crazy people, and by that I mean, if you go back a couple of episodes, by that I mean that they've only turned up, approximately 1% of them has turned up psychologically and energetically and attentionally to the here and now. If 96% of people are missing in action, and you walk into a room of 10 people, what are the mathematical chances of you meeting one other person who has actually properly turned up? Slim indeed. No wonder almost all teams, almost all management teams, leadership teams, project management teams in business are dysfunctional. No wonder over 90% of IT projects in large organizations never come to fruition. No wonder families are dysfunctional. Again, if you think about the 96%, how many family members in your immediate or extended family are likely to be sane people? As I said a couple of weeks ago, sometimes people complain to me that the examples that I give in this podcast are business related. And I will often say in return that business related problems are far easier to solve than personal problems or family related problems. The amount of time I spend talking to people on Zoom one to one about the dysfunction in their families it's not incredible. Why would it not be credible if 96% of people are mad? But the fact of the matter is that most people don't know how to behave themselves because they are not there. Now, again, I explained what I mean by not there in the last episode and in the previous episode. And in both those episodes, essentially all I was doing was pressing into a couple of sentences decades of research from a number of universities around the world. From the neural lab in UCLA that says the normal crazy mind is bombarded by 70,000 repetitive thoughts every waking day. That's what the normal crazy person is paying attention to. They're not paying attention to what is actually going on. Those 70,000 thoughts are the thoughts that are being used to interpret what's being said to them, done for them, as a result of which they haven't a clue what's actually going on, because those 70,000 thoughts are the same 70,000 thoughts that they have been thinking every day since they were 12 or 13 years of age. And the really important ones of those 70,000 thoughts, how they feel about themselves, are stuff that they actually learned when they were 2 or 3 years old. So if you don't turn up to your own life, that is where you are buried. You're buried in this madness. And that madness will take the real challenges of everyday life and add a big layer of anxiety, frustration, worry, and stress on top of them. And you'll give yourself a heart attack and die. Now, again, we talked about stress over the last couple of months. And as I said to somebody in a one-to-one conversation a couple of days ago, everyday stress will shorten your life by 7 to 10 years. I said, I don't want to give you something else to be stressed about, but that's just a statement of fact. In exactly the same way, if you're not getting a good night's sleep, something I alluded to earlier on, you're not necessarily going to shorten your lifespan, but you're going to seriously damage your quality of life in later life. Because if you're not getting 7 or 8 hours sleep every night, the proteins that are implicated in the onset of dementia and Alzheimer's will start building up on the synapses in the neural pathways in the brain now. And they are an indicator of dementia in later life. So it isn't just that if you don't get a good night's sleep tonight, you're not going to be in top form tomorrow. You are damaging yourself further down the road. Now, somebody said to me a couple of months ago, now you've given me something else to worry about at 4 o'clock in the morning. There's no way in the world that I'm going to get a good night's sleep now. But of course, there are ways in which we can manage our mind. And we'll talk about getting a good night's sleep at some point in the future. But I want to come back to, first of all, the nonsense of the normal to-do list and how what is on the to-do list is driven by our thinking minds. And bear in mind how I've just described how our thinking minds actually operate. So half the stuff that's on your to-do list shouldn't be there. If you're a normal crazy person and you look at your to-do list, you'll find the stuff on that that's been there for days, weeks, or months. If you haven't done something that's been there for weeks at this stage, chances are it doesn't need to be done. The interesting thing is that most people will put the kind of rubbish on their to-do list that they fill their days with so that they end up not having time to do the important things. A little bit like my waiter friend at the beginning of this episode, who is doing anything and everything but what he was supposed to be doing. But the other aspect, as I said, of to-do lists is that a lot of the stuff on somebody's to-do list has been put there as a result of pressure being imposed from some other mad person. So like everything that we talk about in these episodes, you need to turn conventional wisdom on its head. Indeed, conventional wisdom, that phrase itself is an oxymoron. Those two words don't go together. Because conventional means normal, and normal is mad. So how could you have anything approaching wisdom when you're using your mind normally? The interesting thing, as an aside, is that the more you clear your mind, the wiser you will become. The more aware you will become, the more aware you will become of who you really are, the more aware you will become of what is going on in the here and now, and the more aware you will become of what you need to do in the here and now. And that will never appear on the to-do list. Let's look at this in really practical terms. And I'm going to use a simple example from a client of mine a couple of years ago. This guy had been confronted with a particularly difficult family situation over the course of a number of years, where basically the family, he and his siblings, were split down the middle into two separate camps. And obviously, or I was going to say obviously, he wanted that situation to be resolved. It isn't obvious to most people, because most people actually thrive on fighting. Most people thrive on stirring things up and annoying other people, because they are normal, crazy people. But my friend, my client, wanted this situation resolved. And he said, how am I going to have the conversation that I need to have with my other two brothers? He said, what will I say to them to resolve the issue? He said, I can't even see myself sitting down with them. I said, no, what you actually meant to say was, you don't think you could see yourself sitting down with them. And you don't think you would be able to say the things that you need to say to resolve these issues. But that's only because your thinking mind and its 70,000 thoughts are getting in the way. So he said to me, and this was in advance of an agreed family conference, if I can put it like that. He said, what am I going to say? I said, you don't need to worry about that at this moment in time. He said, but I need to get my ducks in a row. I said, and your thinking mind will do that? It definitely will not. What you need to do is allow your doing mind present you with what you need to say in the circumstances in which you find yourself moment to moment. Most people, in advance of sitting down to a meeting like that, or a conference like that, or a conversation like that, will have a script planned for themselves. By most people, I mean crazy people. And they will actually go into a meeting or a conversation with plans as to what they will say and what the other person might say. And if the other person says this, I'll say that. And then the other person says something completely unexpected, because they're mad too. What are you going to do? Your script is no use to you anymore, and you're certainly not going to achieve what you wanted to get out of the situation in which you find yourself, because now you don't have your script anymore. Now you're in a place where you don't know what's going on. You only think you know what's going on because you're using your mind normally. You can't script a conversation if for no other reason than there's more than one person involved. What you need to do in a situation like my friend was sitting down for is a so-called family conference, what you need to do is fully turn up to the here and now. In exactly the same way as you fully turn up when faced by a woman or man eating tiger. Now I'm not thinking. Now I'm just experiencing what's going on in the here and now. Now I know what I want to achieve out of the situation in which I find myself. With the man eating tiger, that's an easy one. I want to survive. In the family situation, my friend knew that he wanted the situation resolved. He didn't know how it would be resolved, but he knew what it would feel like after it had been resolved, because he'd set his mind by handwriting how it would feel when the dust had settled, when they were in the clear, so to speak. Now, if you don't know what I'm talking about, you need to go back a few episodes in relation to how to set your mind, the second of what I would call the two-piece jigsaw. The first piece of the jigsaw is that you turn up to that conversation so that now I'm present. Now, that gives you an enormous advantage over everybody else. As I said a few minutes ago, if there are 10 people in a room and you're the only person who is present, you are in a position to greatly influence everything that happens in that room, because you've turned up, because you know what's going on, and because as a result of that, you know what you need to say and do moment to moment. You'll never know in advance, for the simple reason that in advance, the nows that will happen in advance haven't happened now. We live our lives in nows, as we've said so many times before. So I need to turn up to each now, be fully aware of what's going on each now, and say the right things that pushes the right buttons and pulls the right levers to influence other people. As someone else has said to me, but in a situation like that, I can't control the outcome. He said, you're suggesting perhaps I can even control other people's minds. I can get people to like me. I can get people to be happy with me. I can get, as somebody else said to me a couple of months ago, I can get people to be my clients. Now that, of course, is all nonsensical. You can't control other people's minds. You can't control other people. You can't control outcomes. You can control nothing in your life with one oh so important exception. You can control your own state of mind. Once you are in control of your own state of mind, in other words, once you are present, once you are free of thought, once you are in flow, once you are aware, once you are in control of your own state of mind, you will greatly influence everything and everyone around you. Not just by what you say, but by your very demeanor, your body language, by the way in which your energy flows. It flows out of you into other people. And I mean that actually scientifically, if we look at the electromagnetic effect of how our energy flows and sends out signals, subtle signals, to those around us. And other people will be influenced, and they may not even know, they probably won't know because they're not all there, how or why they're being influenced, but they'll find themselves moving towards a satisfactory conclusion or outcome. I'll give you one final example of this. Now, this is a business example, so I'm going to apologize in advance. Many years ago, I had a client who was the chief executive of a very well-known, very large life insurance company. And every month, he would meet with his board. And for a number of months, he had been trying to get his board to make a particular decision. Now, I don't know what the decision was. I don't know what the issue was. He didn't go into that, but he said, I have a board meeting in a couple of weeks' time, and if I raise this issue again, they will immediately knock me down. He said, but this outcome is what I really need to achieve for a particular part of the business. How am I going to achieve this if I've been banging my head off this stone wall for the last 10 months? I said, well, the first thing you need to do is you need to stop banging your head off the stone wall. The funny thing is that when you do that, the pain stops. That's kind of blindingly obvious. I said, you need to know how you will feel when you come out of your next board meeting, having got what you want to achieve. Right? That's what I said to him. I said, you need to write it down. Now, again, I'm not going to go into how you do that in detail because we covered that a few weeks ago. I got a phone call from this guy about 5 weeks later. He said, I am phoning you to tell you that I'm living my perfect moment. Now, again, as I said recently, when we handwrite an outcome that we want to achieve as if we're already there, that's what I call a perfect moment. And again, as I said a few weeks ago, people with whom I work, they'll all have written perfect moments about various different things, various different outcomes that they want to achieve. The perfect moment that he had written was that he was sitting in his corner office with big semicircular windows looking out over the estuary with a cup of coffee in his phone, telling me that the board had made the decision that he wanted them to make. That is how he set his mind. He wrote that he was talking to me. He said, before I went into that meeting, I did the other thing that you told me to do. I mini-meditated for a couple of minutes to make sure that when I went in the door into the boardroom, I was fully present. He said, I knew why I was fully present. I knew what outcome I was looking for. I sat down. The board meeting started. The chairman took the conversation in a particular direction. Somebody else said that the organization needed to do what I've been trying to get them to do for the last 10 months. They thought it was their idea. Everybody else thought, because it was their idea, it was a great idea. I said nothing, and I got exactly what I wanted without opening my mouth. And I said to him, that is the way the world works. Why do you think people say to me that it feels like things just happen for them? Why have I mentioned to you in this podcast so many times that so many people have said to me that it feels like things just fall into their lap? Now, him saying nothing at a board meeting, that would never appear on the normal crazy people's to-do list, would it? You actually doing nothing? That'd be a blank to-do list, wouldn't it? That is the madness of having a to-do list. That is the madness of saying to yourself, well, at 4 o'clock this afternoon, I have to do this, that, and the other. Even if you don't, and I'm not talking about a meeting, you're saying to yourself, I'm going to get this, that, and the other done today. And you don't know what's going to happen today. You don't even know if you're going to be alive at the end of the day, but we're not going to end this podcast episode on a low note. Why don't you do what it takes first thing in the morning to set your mind so that you know not only are you going to be alive today, you're going to be fully alive. You're going to actually be experiencing your life because you have turned up to it moment to moment. And having turned up to it moment to moment, you know exactly what you need to do and when you need to do it. In other words, you're always going to be the right person in the right place at the right time. And that makes life oh so easy, to the point of effortlessness. There you are. We've dealt with anxiety, frustration, worry, stress, and God knows what else in the course of the last few minutes. The lesson, as always, is that your life is in your own hands. Your life is what you make of it. Nobody else can take that away from you, even though 96% of the people that you will meet today are crazy. And indeed, not only is that a good way to end this particular episode, it sets us up nicely for the next one, doesn't it? I think we'll talk about how to actually deal with normal crazy people next. Have a good one.
You've been listening to Succeed, Just Let Go. To get involved, join me in my Facebook group, strangely enough called To Succeed, Just Let Go. And for more information, visit www.willy-hall.com.